Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then we consider what you know of the news of the day. 400 billion ringgit has been allocated for the next 5 years under the 12th Malaysia Plan, with many ambitious targets proposed. But how do we make sure that the policy roadmap is adhered to and that these targets are met, especially when rapid and dramatic shifts in leadership of Putrajaya might be the norm rather than the exception? Our first guest tonight is Associate Professor Dato' Madeline Burma. She's a fellow at the Academy of Sciences Malaysia. Madeline, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you.
I know it's a big plan to dissect, and you've been taking a look at it the whole of today. But I'm just wondering, when you're taking a look at something as big as the 12th Malaysia Plan, what was it that struck out to you the most today when it was being tabled? I'm just thinking, beyond the headline figures, that looks really attractive. But what struck you the most?
Well, thank you, Melissa, for inviting me to share my thoughts. Okay, every time when we look at a five-year development plan, the first thing that we would look for is, like, for example, to what extent had it achieved the previous plan? That's number one. To a certain extent, we need to know, is it going to be a plan that is something new, or is it something that had been, it's kind of a repetition. So when I look at the RM12, or rather Rancangan Malaysia Ke-12, or the 12th Malaysia Plan, I can see that there are some new things, but there are a lot that I think has been there that had not been achieved in the 11th Malaysia Plan. So basically, what is new? And what is, I was expecting something really, really dramatic, but I couldn't find it there. So that's basically it.
Madeline, one of the issues, of course, with the 11th Malaysia Plan, as you mentioned, is the political volatility that we've had over that period, right? So it started with the Barisan National Government. It was enunciated by Barisan National Government. But then Pakatan Harapan came. And then, of course, we had Perikatan Nasional. And now we have some iteration of the same. So the question is, what do these plans mean at all if you have such dramatic shifts in leadership in Putrajaya? I mean, are plans like this predicated on political stability of the sort that the Soviet Union might have had?
Thank you, Chad. That's a very interesting question. That's a PhD Viva exam question. Okay, let me just recap that. That was really interesting. Now, I think one thing I need to point out is that Malaysia's, one of our success stories, if I may say, is that Malaysia, unlike many other, there are some developing countries who failed in their planning. When we say why they failed is that some of them, along the way, yes, they have this long-term plan, 20-year plan, or maybe a 10-year plan. In some countries, many of them stopped along the way because of two things. One, as you have rightly mentioned, that is the political instability, number one. Number two, they lack the resources to proceed with the planning. Now, the good thing about Malaysia is that Malaysia has never stopped in terms of its planning since the the years even before our independence and right after independence, starting with Rancangan Malaysia Pertama, or our first Malaysia plan, and now we are in our 12th Malaysia plan. So until now, we have never stopped despite the volatility. So although people say that maybe this is really something that Malaysia can be proud of, or something that Malaysia's, I don't know, that is really something that I think my PhD student should do something like that, Chad.
Yes, we definitely need a longer time to discuss that beyond the half an hour of this show. But Madeline, can I just ask you, you said that you were struggling to find anything, anything new or a game changer in this 12th Malaysia Plan. And you mentioned there was a lot of repetition from things that we hadn't yet achieved in the 11th Malaysia Plan. I'm just wondering about that. Was that a failure of planning? Did we set targets too high? Was it a failure of achievement and accountability along the way? Do you see this as repetition because we didn't plan properly? Or is it about giving it more time, more continuity to put these policies and see the results?
That's another interesting point, eh, Melissa? Now, there are a few things. For every time there is going to be a new plan, what the new plan will do is that in the first part of the document, they will review the achievement in the previous plan. Now, if you look at the 12 Malaysia plan, we must recognize that it was drafted, the plan was done during the period of really, just now it was political volatility. The more important one is actually economics. Yeah? If you look at the COVID-19, so many of the things that we plan to achieve in RM, or rather in the 11th Malaysia plan, like for example, look at there are issues that have not been properly addressed. Like for example, the systemic problem of unemployment, it has been there for God knows ages. You know, the issue about, you know, our graduates' unemployment. So it is not something that, you know, it just happened today during the 12th Malaysia plan. It had been there in the 11th Malaysia plan, and even to a certain extent in the 10th Malaysia plan. So what it means is that there are some things that have not changed much. So this is what I was really worried when I was looking through the document. I do see that in the there were efforts to come up with new ideas. Eh? Like, for example, I do hope that it's not a rhetoric. Like, for example, saying that, you know, we need to shift away from what we call capital and labor intensive production or economic model. That means we should not rely too much on capital or labor, but that we should move towards technology. But we have been saying this, I think, if I'm not mistaken, from the 10th Malaysia plan and the 11th Malaysia plan. But so far, I mean, nothing much has changed. So I really hope the post-pandemic will definitely bring about, I really hope that this will bring about the change that we really wanted in the 12th Malaysia plan. Because it has been, you know, Yes.
Right. I mean, Madeline, if I could interrupt you, you know, part of the criticism has been that, that it is in fact a rhetorical, in most parts, it's aspirational, maybe that's the correct term to use.
Yeah.
Malaysia is suffering from premature deindustrialization, according to some economists. The issue really is that in the 21st century, can governments make such plans? I mean, are we looking really at planning of a different sort? Does it have to be, for instance, decentralized? We look at Sarawak's demand for autonomy, a full autonomy. Recent, you know, criticism coming out of Sabah is that they're colonized by the peninsula, and they are stepchildren in the federation. I mean, are we looking at a Malaysia where no one particular model is going to fit all the three territories and satisfy them politically? Will there need to be some devolution?
I definitely agree with you. But in terms of planning, this morning we were discussing, some even argued that maybe we don't even need a five-year plan. What the dynamic situation that we are in, you know, the dynamism, if you look at, you know, last year or the year before, we don't know such a thing called My Sejahtera. Suddenly, it is part of our life. So you can't be planning for something that is like 5 years. Some people say, maybe we go through the yearly process, you know, like the budget. Budget is a one-year plan. So maybe a five-year plan is a bit too long. So we need to, in fact, I was the one in our discussion this morning. I said, in modeling, you know, these economists, they like to do modeling, they like to do prediction. I said, we need to incorporate the concept of time, you know, time in the sense of how dynamic is time. Because now, right, even data, you know, the data that we have for poverty, that data is static data. What static data means, you know, I have to register, I wait for 1 year for someone to verify, then my name is in the list. Now, the poor, they fall into poverty every other minute. So you can't have a 1 year plan, or let alone a 5 year plan. But coming back to the evolution.
Yes. Get you to elaborate a little bit on that, because, you know, one of the initiatives or one of the proposals under this plan was a special unit to tackle poverty, right? And that was both at the federal and district levels. And I'm just wondering, is this the way? I mean, again, Malaysia, we're so good at task force and committees and surveys. But when you're talking about poverty, you're talking about static data that's static, yes. That's not, you know, that's not really reflective of the picture on the ground. Is this the best way forward if we really want to do something to tackle poverty?
Okay, Melissa, well, to me, it's just one of the many, many steps, but it is not something that I will, you know, I'm so excited about, because I'm really not excited about bodybuilding in government departments. You know, somebody become a jatuh kuasa here, left and right, which, like you rightly mentioned, that we are really good at. Now, the way I understood, I've yet to look into the full document yet. I only have access to what the Prime Minister's announcement made. He mentioned something about a unit that transcends from federal right up to the local level. But to me, as long as data is static, as long as, you know, it is government driven, and I doubt that it will achieve what we in the field, who are really working in the field, think that we can achieve. For example, the government cannot do, you know, poverty alleviation alone. Government needs to bring in NGOs. Government needs to work with the communities. Gone were the days when government knows everything. So to me, the setting up of a unit, yeah, I would like to say thank you. But that's a good effort, because there will be an effort to coordinate. But the more bigger things is that we need new models. We need new approaches to address poverty. We cannot use the same old story. So that's basically my point. Yeah.
Dato' Madeline Burma, thank you so much for joining us on the show. You've been talking the whole day about the 12 Malaysia Plan. Your voice has gone hoarse.
I know.
And we really appreciate you joining us on the show tonight. Madeline Burma from the Academy of Sciences Malaysia there. We're going to take a quick break on Consider This. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Hi, you're watching Consider This. I'm Melissa Edwards. With me is Sherrod Gooden. If you've just joined us on the show, we're discussing the 12th Malaysia Plan, which was tabled in Parliament today. Let's zoom in on the policy roadmap for the healthcare sector. Joining us now is Azra Muhammad Khalid, Chief Executive of the Gallen Centre for Health and Social Policy. Azra, good evening.
Evening.
In a statement that was released today, that the Gallen Centre released today, I mean, you were responding to the 12 Malaysia Plan, and you had said, if I may quote the statement, said, there are several problems in what was outlined and likely only one real game changer in this section. I'm just wondering, Azra, if you could help us understand what you meant, what you thought was particularly a game changer for health, and then we can begin with the good things and then address the gaps after.
Well, thank you, Melissa. You know, one of the things that we really look in for something like this, which is a 5-year national strategic plan, is whether there's any real effort to actually make real change. And it requires that there be a commitment that's stated in something like this. And what we saw was really in the area of sustainable healthcare financing, which was identified as an area of concern and needing to be addressed. And we support the application of the means testing to provide targeted subsidization for healthcare services for those who most need it, as has been outlined in the 12 Malaysia Plan. So those who can afford to pay more for government medical services should definitely be able to pay more, so that it can help support those who are less privileged. And I think this reform is many, many years overdue and will help dramatically reduce the government's financial burden, which is steadily increasing each year. The current situation is just not sustainable. So we do believe that is a possible game changer, but it would have been even better if the government had announced its intent to introduce a compulsory national health insurance scheme, which could actually spread the risk pool revenues and improve treatment options and provide sustainability during times of crisis like this one. So that would have been a true game changer.
Yeah, Azra, you point to some of the the specificities of what a Malaysia plan would be, which is that it really is not about addressing what is present, though the present problems clearly will bear on how the plan is made, because this is supposed to be a long-term plan. And you know, throughout this year and a half, we've been talking about decades of underinvestment in health in the public sector. So is that addressed? Is there any analysis and recognition of that problem and a sense of how it might, in fact, be put right over the coming decades, maybe?
Well, to be honest, Shara, I think not many people are going to be enthusiastic about the health section of the 12 Malaysian plan. And I include that the health minister and the people at the Ministry of Health. And the reason that I say this is because, you know, considering the fact that we've gone through so much for the past 18 months, you know, the sacrifices made by thousands of frontline health and non-health essential workers, and the many strengths and gaps identified, the hard-won lessons from the COVID-19 response, we feel that it's quite underwhelming regards to what we would expect from something that is looking at responding to some of the issues that were raised during these past 18 months. You know, we expected a much more ambitious and perhaps even progressive agenda that's going to be outlined for the next 5 years. And we just didn't see that, you know. And we often overlook the fact that the healthcare sector is a leader and driver of economic progress in Malaysia. And the fact is that it increased 11% annually compared to the GDP growth of the country, which was double, basically, that of the GDP. So there's so much untapped potential in the healthcare sector. But the 12 Malaysia plan not only does not reflect the fact that we're coming out from a COVID-19 crisis, it also doesn't reflect the potential of tapping into that untapped potential of the health sector.
Azrul, help me understand if we achieved what it was that we wanted to achieve from the 11th Malaysia plan. Because if I'm not mistaken, there's going to be yet another study to see how, you know, where we can reform the healthcare system. Did we not, you know, do that in the previous plans, or did we need a new one because of the pandemic and which revealed new strains in the healthcare system?
I mean, honestly, Melissa, you know, I'm just surprised that yet another study is being proposed to put together this Malaysia Health System Reform Blueprint. I mean, we've already had at least half a dozen studies over the past 20 years looking at the same issues of national healthcare reforms. I guarantee you that if you look at the latest one, which was done in 2016, which was commissioned by the Ministry of Health and conducted by the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health, you will find the same findings and conclusions from that report that we will come, even with the COVID-19 crisis being what it is and what it has shown. Because what this crisis, this public health emergency has done, is to increase the highlight, widen the gap, but most importantly, shine a light on many of those reforms which are needed and can, in fact, be done today. Just look at those recommendations from that study. What we actually need the most is actually the courage and political will to implement the recommendations from that study, not another study.
Right. Azrul, thank you so much. Always a pleasure speaking with you. Azrul Muhammad Khalid from the Gallen Center there. Another quick break here and consider this, but more on the 12th Malaysia plan in just a few minutes. Stay tuned. Hello, thank you so much for staying with Shraddha and I on Consider This. Let's continue our discussion on the 12th Malaysia Plan, which was tabled today. Did we seize this opportunity to rebuild, reform and transform the Malaysian economy specifically? Let's ask Tricia Yeo, who's the CEO of the think tank Ideas. Tricia, welcome to the show. This five-year plan, I'm just wondering whether this is the plan that we need coming out of a pandemic, hoping to come out of a pandemic better and stronger, or are you seeing more of the same and, you know, unmet targets from the previous five-year plan?
Hi, Melissa and Sharat. Thanks for having me. I think it's a five-year plan that tries to hit the right terms and phrases. And in some cases, like I think in the social protection and the more of like the social areas, social policy, you know, having poverty targets, having like a national mental health plan, restoring the mental, the national registry suicide. So there are some things there, but I see there's a lot more emphasis on this sort of social protection, which I suppose on the one hand you do need emerging out of the pandemic, but in terms of really talking about restructuring and addressing the core fundamental deficiencies that ail the economy, that was missing. And, you know, one big area which I'm still trying to digest as well is why the government continues to be obsessed with the corporate equity targets. And in this case, the government has actually gone a step further in talking about how Bumiputras will be able to buy up Bumiputra firms and shares in this sort of new framework. So I'm trying to get my head around this emphasis. So on the one hand, there are some good things, but on another hand, the deficiencies that we've been talking about again and again, we've said, for example, that the pandemic was a great opportunity to address these, and I don't think I saw that happening in either the speech or the document.
Tricia, could we have expected more? I mean, this is a five-year plan enunciated by a government that might not have more than 1 year in power before it goes into an election. I mean, is this all kind of smoke and mirrors basically for the next election rather than a government that has the just the confidence, but the time to think through what it wants to do in the remaining years of its existence?
Well, I mean, to its credit, there are some things that, you know, we've been talking about these sort of good governance measures quite a lot, and these institutional reforms. And so there was some of that there, right? Like, many things that IDEAS works on, so I should be happy for some of them, like budget transparency and procurement reforms and having a procurement legislation, Fiscal Responsibility Act, corporate governance of SOEs and GLICs and so on. But I think one can't help feeling like you're reading something that sounds good on paper, but whether or not it's actually going to be executed. So for example, like, I mean, I'm just quoting as well, right? Board appointments into state-owned enterprises based on merit, integrity, technical, financial, and corporate management skills. Like, is that really going to happen? I mean, looking at the slate of political appointments today, and in fact, tomorrow, we're also launching this thing called Pantau Kuasa, which is the mapping out of all the GLC political appointments throughout the last three administrations. I don't see those things really happening. I mean, if they are able to do that, then sure. But to answer Sharad's question, yes, this administration will not have 5 years. It will have perhaps 2 years at most, and that's sort of stretching it already because we know when the election needs to take place. I think that the bigger, broader question is really, are the five-year plans something that's truly necessary for a country that wants to be dynamic and updating itself over the long term? And
Tricia, I love that you said that.
Sorry, go ahead.
I love that you said that, because we were wondering the same thing. Sharad and I were talking about whether five-year plans are precisely what Malaysia needs. Is that too long? What is that predicated on besides the Soviet era? But is that an election cycle? Should we be thinking about shorter, more flexible, more fluid, more targeted plans that we can hold targets accountable? Is that what you're saying?
This is what I think. I think there is some value to having long-term plans, but the long-term plans therefore need to also come with sort of very clear ideas of what it is that we want to prioritize. So I know the plan has like an entire section on prioritization, and this is something that we've actually been complaining about for a while now. But I think it needs to have these like structural plans and then have the targets in between as well, right? So something like the National Anti-Corruption Plan that the PH administration put forward, that's actually mentioned in this five-year plan. But But even the NACP, why it was good was because there were some clear targets, like which years these things are going to happen. And for this one, there are some things that are good. That's why, I mean, I'm trying to go through it. It's like 500-page document, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, maybe for the remaining time that I have, I can just talk about the things that I do see kind of like picking out here and there, the good things. But in terms of truly reviving the economy and revitalizing it and what we want to see coming out of the pandemic, I think that's not quite there. And I don't think even, like, any five-year plan would be able to do that, bearing in mind that there are other unforeseen circumstances coming out, right? So maybe if I just, like, pick on a few things that I think are still good that we should commend. So, for example, we've talked for a long time that the social protection system is not well coordinated. So they're merging, like, the Social Protection Council and this other, you know, special cabinet council that talks about social protection and poverty. So that's one thing. And I mentioned earlier, like, the whole slate of budget transparency and fiscal issues, corporate governance of SOEs. There's this, like, new emphasis on poverty. So and also marginalized groups. So there's, like, a good development plan for the Orang Asli, for example, with some clear targets. And then education, there's some emphasis on TVET. But you see this as more bits and bobs, right? Like, you're trying to paint a picture and you've got really nice highlights in certain parts of the picture. But when you draw back and you look at the overall picture, is the painting coherent? Does it make sense? So I think that's still that overarching narrative. That's the missing link that I'm trying to find. What is this plan really all about? Like,
I like that analogy. That's really good. That's a good analogy to give our painting. We need to look at the overall painting and make sure the painting itself is a good painting and not just a mosaic. Thank you so much, Tricia. We appreciate your time. That was Tricia Yeo of Ideas wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Liz Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching. Good night.